From WXXI News, I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Our connection this hour was made a week ago, Wednesday night, when a drive-by shooting happened on Genesee Street near the Boys and Girls Club. 7 people shot, 3 died, 4 injured, and this community was in many ways shattered by those moments, the images of grief, of suffering, and the questions about senseless violence. This hour, we're trying to look forward and talk about ways that different organizations in our community are reaching out to people who need help and doing their best to make sure that those who do need the help are getting it, to build a productive life, to build everything we need as a community not to see these kind of headlines and stories again. And you might have heard that at least one of the people who was shot and killed, Raekwon Manigault, was working with Teen Empowerment. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to talk about what Teen Empowerment is, what they've been doing, what they're going to do going forward. And certainly they were rocked by these events, but they are doing important work, and we're going to learn about that this hour. One of my guests is Kit Miller from the Gandhi Institute locally. And before we talk Teen Empowerment, Kit, I just want to talk a little broadly with you and grab that mic and pull it close to you there so we can hear you there. First of all, how are you? I mean, it's just a really remarkably difficult week, I think, for many people. And I wonder first your general sentiments. How are you?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
We were blessed. We're always lucky that a lot of the youth organizations in the city use our space for different events. And Doug and the Teen Empowerment crew had actually been using the Gandhi House for their youth police dialogues. And so Raekwon was actually just at our place a couple times. And one of my young colleagues who was on your show with me recently, Hootie, knew him, and also Jonah, who was one of the other young men that was killed. So, and it's all that happened a mile away from our house. So there's that, happening. And to be honest, there's also a wondering is the fact that we've lost 3 young ones all together going to be enough to make us want to do something different? Because my sense is if their deaths had been spaced out,
yeah,
even in that same block, over a couple of weeks or months, it would have felt more like business as usual. So is there a way that this community could really mobilize to do something different because we have lost too many of our young ones?
That is such an important point because we have seen the number of shootings in this city rise this year. Now, we know that year to year there are always some fluctuations when it comes to numbers of violence and homicide, but for whatever reason this year, there have been more shootings, most of them, according to the police chief, shootings among people who are involved in crime, people who know each other, but not all. And yeah, you're right, Kit, most of them are what you would call single-victim shootings. And if all 7 of the people shot, again, 3 dying, 4 injured, happened separately, there almost certainly isn't the outrage. Why is that, and how do we change that? I mean, there's no easy answer to that, but how do we start to change that?
I think we've become normalized to violence, especially, violence among Black youth in our community. So why are we numb? I think people become numb because they need to survive, or because a lot of people in the community walk around with PTSD, honestly, from the amount of violence that they've experienced since they were young people, especially if they lived in some of the neighborhoods that we have that are affected by multi-generational poverty. So the why makes all kinds of sense, especially in the Black community. The why of why people have become accustomed to it in the white community is, for me, a sadder question. As someone who's, as a parent myself who lost a child to violence some years ago, I mean, you can never get used to the loss of a child. And so to have, knowing that there's so many parents that reside in our city that have lost their children, it's just not okay. But we are who we are. So now the question is, what can we do with the fact that a fresh, bigger loss has perhaps opened up a different possibility conversation? I don't know.
Well, later this hour, we're going to be talking to Doug Ackley and Sean Brown from Teen Empowerment. What, when you look around the city, and in fact, I think they're walking in now. When you look around the city, Kit's smiling through the glass door. Yeah, bring them on in, Veronica. That's great. When you look around our city, Kit, what do you see? Hi, gentlemen. Go ahead, sit right down. Grab those microphones there.
These guys are always on youth worker time. That's doesn't okay. matter where we are, what we're doing.
No, that's all right. In fact, because we're on City 12 today, one of you gentlemen, we need you on the other side. See, look, this is live radio. How about you, Sean, Doug, whatever you want to do. Is that all right there? Okay. Let me welcome to the program.
You didn't know we were on TV too, right?
I did not.
Thank you.
If you're watching Time Warner Cable in the city of Rochester right now on City 12, you can see us.
Oh.
So hello. Doug, how are you?
I'm okay. Thank you. Thanks, Evan.
Doug's from Teen Empowerment. And Sean Brown, how are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Very good. It's been a really, really rough week. And Kit and I were just talking about, I think Kit made a really important point that I'd like Doug and Sean to respond to, which is that we had 7 young men shot in a single incident. But if those had been spaced out, 4 injuries and 3 deaths over week to week, month to month in individual events, maybe most of our community doesn't even know their names, isn't even aware of that. Why is that, Sean?
Unfortunately, when a singular tragedy happens and people lose their lives, I feel like it's always catastrophic for that family, for those friends, that community. But I feel like folks outside of that little bubble don't really realize that this impact or this loss really happened. A singular person has passed away, I think it kind of goes by the wayside. It's just an event that happens in the city, on some street, or in some community anywhere around the country. But I think a tragedy like this happens when you have, multiple people affected by gunfire and that violence all at one second. I think the city becomes outraged. It makes news in the suburbs, the rural areas, and also it makes national news.
Doug, what do you think?
I agree. I agree with what Sean said. I don't have a whole lot more to add other than, I think that, part of what we're trying to do is bring people together, bring young people together, bring youth and adults together, whether we're doing it in schools, whether we're bringing youth and police together, whether we're bringing youth and mental health workers together. And we're trying to really expand what our sense of community is. And I think that once that view of what community is expands, people feel closer to the kinds of things that happen that sometimes only some of us see or know about. And that's, I think, real important, because it's easy to disconnect. Who wants to connect to this kind of thing, first of all? And so I think that there's a lot of ways that as a community we try to disconnect. One of the things that people always say is like, oh, well, what kind of kids were they? What was their background when they were shot? And the reason why people ask that question is because we want to be able to think that because they had a troubled past or because they were involved in something, well, that somehow makes it okay. Mm-hmm. And then I can sleep at night because I didn't know that, but this kid was in some trouble anyway, so they probably deserved it. And I think that that is so destructive and damaging in our community, and it's exactly the kind of bridge that the divide that we want to be able to bridge, so that people understand every single one of these kinds of tragedies are one of our children in our community. And that's real important when people can actually connect to that. And that's what people do sometimes vicariously through, Teen Empowerment, and they'll send, no, oh, I'm sorry, that was close. Because by being close to Teen Empowerment, it's close to our world of Teen Empowerment. So other folks who may not have been close to this kind of situation feel it in a different way. And I think it's important that we feel part of that, so that we can really start to step up and involve people in preventing this kind of thing from ever happening again.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation as we seek with our panel to look at the positive programs and efforts that are going on in our city as we try to move forward from the events of last Wednesday, you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, we've talked in the last week about how the media, and I'm just as guilty as anybody, sometimes we talk about anything in numbers as opposed to human impact, crime included. And these were young men, some of which you guys knew. Raekwon Manigault, you knew him through teen empowerment, right?
Well, I've actually know, we call him Ray Ray. I've known Ray Ray since he was about 7 or 8 years old. He played football for the Southwest Coast organization. My mom was the vice president of that organization and been volunteering there for 30 years. And my daughter always cheered for the teams that Ray Ray played for. He was a stellar athlete, so that's kind of how he first came into my life. But I coached him AAU basketball. We went to Virginia 3 years in a row and finished in the top five in the country, AAU basketball. So I knew him from his basketball, football. He was a great boxer. And then he was a club kid. So I used to work at the Boys and Girls Club for about 7 years, and I saw Ray almost every day. And then Jonah Barley, another young man that I met through the Boys and Girls Club, you know, one of my club kids. And I know Jonah since he's about 8 or 9. Same thing, him and my daughter had a very close relationship. So, you know, Jonah was definitely full of personality and super charismatic and just always put a smile on your face. So, yeah, it would definitely hit close to home. And definitely affected me in a deep way, knowing that, like, you know, I've known these two young men for a long time. And obviously, Raekwon had been working with us for the last six weeks or so. You know, he stopped Doug and I one day on Genesee Street when Doug and I were doing some outreach and kind of talked about, you know, some obstacles he had in his life prior to coming to Teen Empowerment and how he was really focused and motivated at this point in his life to do something different. And he really started to put that transformation in the motion. He was doing awesome work. You know, he participated in our youth police dialogues with the recruits at the academy and then also a couple sessions with the officers from the west side of the city. So he was out there being a leader, changing internally, and then very much poised to change his community.
Sean, how is this going to impact the people who knew them, the people who are around them? I mean, they're gone. Jonah and Ray are gone, but they had friends, and maybe their friends saw them doing good, productive things or thinking about it and having those conversations. And do we know? How are they doing?
I mean, I guess that's our concern right now more than anything, you know, is those young people, all the people that knew Ray and knew Jonah and came in contact with them on a daily basis. You know, we kind of heard a little story from another young man that I know pretty well, a little bit better than Doug, but how over the last 5 weeks, the only thing that Ray said to him in conversation was about teen empowerment. And how the work he was doing meant something to him, and how he saw the work that he was doing could transform and change the community. And so when you have two young men, and, you know, Mr. Johnson obviously had his friends and his family. I didn't personally know him. But when you have two young men that, you know, had kind of been in the west side of the city their whole lives, you know, through Boys and Girls Club, through youth sports, through school, church, and just kind of living in the same community together. Like, you know, Rochester's a small place, and that network is very tight. And it's definitely a family atmosphere. And so when you have, you know, potentially thousands of kids, I mean, young people, not even adults, young people that knew these two young men in a very close and personal, intimate way, when you lose those guys like that and the way they were taken away from us at such an early age, I mean, devastated. I don't really know what more to say. You know, already broken community in a lot of ways. And then to kind of add this on top of that, you know, we just got to stay strong and try to move forward.
This is an important moment especially for those young people, isn't it?
Indeed. You know, we're hoping that through this tragedy, we can build some sense of community, some unity, and hopefully people will learn from this loss, and it'll kind of force us to look at ourselves, look at our community, look at the issues that are really pressing Rochester right now, and work with these young people to really come up with some solutions so we can not have too many more of these tragedies in our community.
All right, before we get to your phone calls, and we're going to talk to Paul in Irondequoit, Heather in Rochester in just a moment. Our guests for the hour include Sean Brown, you just heard, and Doug Ackley. They're here from Teen Empowerment. Kit Miller is here from the Gandhi Institute. Doug, I think it's important before we go any further just to define what teen empowerment is, because it's a term that a lot of people have been hearing in the last week. What's the mission? What is it that you do?
Sure. Well, we hire young people as youth organizers. It's a paid position. They work throughout the year to identify the issues that young people are facing in the community and then developing a strategy to affect those issues. They organize events, activities, and projects that are geared toward young people and bringing young people into a sense of unity. There are events that are fun, that engage youth, but the young people at Teen Empowerment create deep and meaningful consciousness-raising messages to both impact their peers and reach larger than their peers to get at some of the institutional issues that they're facing as well, whether it be with the school district, whether it be with, you know, fighting for more jobs and opportunities in the community or more resources in a certain area. The young people will do speakouts, conferences, forums, dialogues, open mic nights, youth brunches, you know, all kinds of things, dialogues with youth and police, trainings with the police academy to deal with the issues that young people are facing with the police and the way that they oftentimes feel like they're treated. So we really give young people not only a legitimate voice in what's taking place around them, but then they turn their voice into action to create change. You know, it's one thing to listen to young people, and that's a great exercise, and they feel, but they only feel listened to when action is taken upon their words. And so we put both of those things into play and give young people a chance to really become leaders in this community.
And you have some important work coming up, don't you?
Absolutely.
What's coming up?
Well, I mean, I think as Sean mentioned, first of all, we're going to, you know, we're going to see where young people are. We've been, Sean and I have been meeting with young people individually, you know, about what's taking place. We're going to start to pull together smaller groups of folks and listen to them and see what kinds of things they want to organize to heal, to grieve, to unify, and then to look ahead and create some change and start to reignite a sense of hope and what young people can really do in this community when given the opportunity. So I think we're going to continue to fight for, you know, the resources that young people need to make those changes in their lives and in their community.
We also did reach out to the Boys and Girls Club. They do such important work as well, and I think we'll talk to them on a separate date. It has been a very, very difficult and trying week, and so we hope to talk to them at a different time. Kit Miller is here from the Gandhi Institute. Why don't you let our community know what it is that the Gandhi Institute does?
Thank you, but first I actually want to just locate myself as someone who's been a really happy donor to Teen Empowerment over the last years, and I just, like, for me, the sense of partnership, and, like, I really want to put a shout out, like, for that people who are doing work in this community, they need to collaborate with each other, not get all worried about competition. So I'm happy to sit here mainly, you know, not with a Gandhi Institute hat on, but as someone who really loves and supports teen empowerment. I'm glad that I'll have some of the young people that work for me. They're going to be at Wilson. They're there starting today working with the staff, and they're going to be helping to, you know, create some space in the school just across the street from where this took place. They'll be there every day this school year and trying to support young people to be able to focus on being scholars and getting decent to class and getting through that graduation, hitting that target. So that's one of the things that we're going to be working on this year. We're actually going to be in three schools that the state has put on their, you know, endangered species list. So we'll be working every day this year with about 120 middle school kids in the city and supporting two buildings' conflict resolution processes, both at Wilson and at James Monroe, which this year is at Marshall. So we've got a lot going on too, but mostly, honestly, I'm here because I love and appreciate what Teen Empowerment does. And also, the Boys and Girls Club is an enormous institution in the southwest of Rochester. And I guess one thing I just want to say is I think sometimes, especially if you're more suburban-oriented, you tend to think of the cities as being anonymous. I really want to help you understand, if you're not very familiar with city neighborhoods, they're villages. You know, everybody knows everybody. So it's a village. It's just like a village of Fairport or the village of Pittsford. Everybody knows everybody. So when you have losses like this, it hits everybody. Everybody gets affected. It's not some random city and nobody knows each other. It's not like that. It's a neighborhood. It's a village that's been hurt here.
Jake agrees with Kit, by the way. Jake's one of our listeners who writes in, hope you plug these groups for donations. And that's not why they're here. They didn't ask us to do that. But Jake's agreeing with Kit because he says groups like this, in my opinion, are really high on my list of best bang for the buck on actually getting something done in our communities. And so that's Jake writing in. And I want to let our listeners know, you're going to drive the conversation for much of the rest of the hour here as we talk about looking for you know, it's a sort of a broad-based comment looking for solutions, but talking about what is going on, what are you concerned about, what are these organizations doing, and what can we do? And the first person to weigh in is going to be Paul Narondequoit. Go ahead, Paul.
Here's what my thought on it is. One of your guests there spoke right off the bat and said people will that live in the suburbs will say, well, what was the person's history, and how did that how does that affect what they think of the people? Well, unfortunately, and I do mean unfortunately too, because I grew up in the inner city, and I was not, a perfect child. That's how we judge in our society. If you get a speeding ticket, your insurance goes up. You get another one, your insurance goes up. When you commit a crime, you stand before the judge, and your past follows you. Now, I'd also like to say I admire the work that they're trying to do, and I really think they're making headway. But right now, we've got a situation where 7 people are shot. Nobody's seen a picture of the videos. Is our actual city leadership not helping us identify these people? And what is it? Why is that? I really am starting to wonder if this is the old Chicago style city leadership.
Paul, a couple of things, and stay on the line because I want to touch on a couple of points. So the last point you're making is how come? Essentially, it sounds like you're saying how come they don't have someone in custody or haven't released more on who they think did this? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. How is it? How is the community, the people that live there, supposed to help identify the people?
Well, I would
committed a crime. Yeah. If they don't show us any pictures, if a bank gets robbed, the picture's on the television right away.
Yeah.
If a gas station gets robbed, there's a video.
Paul,
videos have never been shown.
I would just say here, Paul, that I think there's a lot that we don't know about what police have been doing in this case, and I would be a little hesitant to assume that they are kind of still on square one and that they haven't been engaged with the public. I don't know the answer to that, but I suspect it won't be long before we hear something from them. So I would just caution to kind of rush to judgment about that. But what you, I want to go back to your previous point and let the panel respond. You're saying that the way we talk about these young people who have been the victims of violence, I want you to elaborate just a little bit more, because you're saying a person's record is important, but how would you sort of phrase it again? I want to make sure I understand what you're saying.
Well, the person commented that if a person, that was one of the individuals that was killed, said that he had a past record and that was brought to the public, known to the public. And whether that's right or wrong, I don't really know. But that is how our society in general just does judge everybody. Like I said, if you get a speeding ticket, your insurance goes up. You get another one, your insurance goes up. Statistically speaking, and I want you to know that I'm one of the people that was one of them statistics, that when you get in trouble, it escalates, and you are more likely to be involved in a higher action or more susceptible to committing more crimes. And in society, that's the way society judges people. So I don't want him to think just because a person lives in the suburbs, oh, it's okay because he got shot because he did something else in his past. It's not like that at all. It really isn't. From all the people that I talk to.
Doug Ackley, Teen Empowerment. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Paul. And I just want to clarify, because I don't think I mentioned that people in the suburbs are going to think that. I think I just simply said that that's a question that is often asked, and I mean I agree with you in a lot of ways that there are certain actions that deserve consequences. But I know a lot of people in my world around Boston growing up who got in a lot of trouble, and not one of them was shot and killed. And so I just, I think that we're talking about something very different. We're not talking about a kind of, somebody does something and then a consequence happens legally as a result of that. I think that's what you're referring to in terms of like, your insurance goes up, or, you get a parking ticket and you have to pay this. I think we're talking about, lives being lost.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's kind of a big jump there, and I want to
And Paul, the way I would sort of characterize it, because I've made similar comments on the program in the last week about my frustration on the same issue. Think about it this way. There was a horrific incident in Virginia this morning. at 6:45 when a news reporter and a videographer were shot and killed live on television this morning. And I had a number of people saying to me, Evan, that used to be your job. I assume you're going to talk about that on the air today. And I said, I can't yet. We need more information. It's too raw. I mean, this whole building, I will tell you, was shaken today. But there is a concern that people will look at the victims and what happened in Virginia and say, well, you know, they were upstanding citizens, killed doing their jobs, you know, their lives had value, and yet somebody gets shot and killed in the city that we don't know, but he, you know, 6 months ago he did rob a store. There's that caveat that I don't think it means, you know, we should not care about someone's criminal record, but sometimes we seem to diminish the value of a life if they were caught up in something, and then we think, well, we didn't really lose something of value. Whereas in Virginia this morning, we were crying this morning. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm sort of saying. You know what I mean, Paul? I mean, I think your point's...
Yes, I do, and it's a very, very good comment. I guess I could boil it down like this. If you're the person that's always sticking her hand in the fire at the barbecue, sooner or later you will get hurt. And, you know, I mean, and believe me, I appreciate the work that people are doing, but if people are committing criminal acts in society, and it's escalating, it's unfortunate, but, you know, that's the statistics are there, that they're the ones that are going to have more problems. And I understand that the organizations are trying to intervene to stop that, and that's wonderful, and they're doing good work. But I with the lack of information that's coming out of our city, people are wondering what exactly is going on here.
Paul, thanks for the call. Sean Brown, can you follow up some of that point there?
Thanks for calling in, Paul. I mean, I guess to kind of piggyback off what Evan said, the past history of any individual that was injured or murdered last week at the Boys and Girls Club, I feel like has to be a non-issue. These were three young people, or seven young people, were all leaving to go home. They came from a peaceful basketball game. They were getting in their cars in a peaceful manner, and someone decided to drive down Genesee Street with the automatic weapon and open fire on the crowd. It could be just as similar if you and eight of your buddies went to a Buffalo Bills game, you enjoyed the game, the game was over, you were walking to your car in the parking lot, and somebody drove through Orchard Park, New York, with a semi-automatic weapon and sprayed that parking lot.
Or going to a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado.
So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Paul, but I kind of feel like in this specific incident that we're talking about, whatever any of those young people that were affected did the day before is a non-issue in that moment, and it's a non-issue today because tomorrow I have to go to services and start burying these young people. So no matter what happened before in their lives, the fact that they're getting put in the ground tomorrow, I kind of feel like that's the only issue, sir.
I just want to say one thing to this. You know, there's lots of documentation, too, that we don't have the same justice system for brown and black children as we do for white, both within schools as well as in, you know, in the courts. So that's a terrific topic for another day, or you've probably already covered it. But I just want to also so one kid is going to get off with a reprimand with no record, another kid is going to get a record, and it's not the same justice system for all of those kids. There's lots to say about this, but I just really wanted to make sure that people also understood that these were young people, you know, out on a beautiful night, a beautiful summer night, going to a basketball game. And that, you know, I think a point that I've made before on the show is that, you know, there have been a lot of mass shootings in this country, and I don't know if this one would be considered to be that, like, officially, but they're actually very rarely occurring in our cities. They're mostly occurring in suburban and affluent areas. And it was after the shooting in Columbine, which is an affluent Denver suburb, that was the pretext that was used to put the metal detectors in our urban schools. So I want to, you know, I think it's important that we keep thinking about the bigger context of all these decisions. Personally, for me, I'm not so sure it's justified that we have our children going through metal detectors on their way into schools in our city, but not cross the line and go into our suburbs, and they don't have to deal with that. Because just looking at it from a research standpoint, it's not justified. So I will stop that particular rant now. Sorry.
Well, let's get to a short break, and we're going to come back, take more of your phone calls, and then, you know, look, again, this is a panel of people who are working with young people in our community and doing such important work as we try to build a strong future for anybody, no matter your background, no matter who you are and who your parents are and what you've gone through. And that's what they're doing. Sean Brown and Doug Ackley from Teen Empowerment are here. Kit Miller from the Gandhi Institute. And also a big fan of Teen Empowerment. She's here.
That's right.
Short break and more of your phone calls are next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we sit down first hour with Jamie Romeo. She is the new head of the local Democratic Party, the chairperson who you might not ever have heard from before. Well, this is our chance to speak to her at length about what the Democratic Party needs going forward. Then second hour, we preview the Puerto Rican Festival. It's all Thursday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, opening its pop season with Megan Hilty on September 11th and 12th, and music director Ward Stair's inauguration with Adagio for Strings, Pines of Rome, and more on September 17th and 19th. Tickets at rpo.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Heather, and let's see here. Heather's in Rochester. Thanks for waiting, Heather. Go ahead.
I have a question for, I guess it's the teen empowerment people.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, since this happened, do you guys feel like it's hard to find people to work for you guys just because they're afraid of everything?
No, I don't think that that's going to be the case, Heather. I think, actually, I mean, we had, you know, part of the power of teen empowerment is that young people get connected through other young people. And I think that, you know, if whenever any of us thinks back to their teenage years, the power of teen influence as opposed to adult influence, I know that my peers were much more influential in my life at that point than my parents were. Or adults around me. And so, you know, we just in the last few days, we've had young people who work at Teen Empowerment and were very close to the young men who were killed tell us that their friend wants to work here and they want to be involved. And one of our young men came in the other day and asked for applications and brought them out to his friends at the memorial site in front of the Boys and Girls Club. Where people are grieving, and he brought them around, and people were, you know, filling out applications because they had asked for them. So I think that, you know, you know, as a result of this, I think people, you know, will see the power in, you know, getting involved in this, and, you know, and getting involved in some, because they've got to be connected to some way that this can change and some sense of hope. I think that the most powerful thing that comes out of something like this is hopelessness, and hopelessness devastates communities. It renders people paralyzed. They don't know what to say or do or where to go or what to do. And I think that the biggest thing that we can bring back into this picture is a sense of hope that things can change, particularly when it comes to our young people. And young people are going to be on the forefront of that hope. So, you know, it's my sense we're actually in the timing cycle of teen empowerment. Over the next couple of weeks, is not a result of what happened. It's just in September every year, we start to go out on the street and recruit for young people for the youth organizer positions. And every year since we started, you know, we get 300 young people applying for 12 positions. And so my sense is that it's either going to be very similar this year or even more.
Does that answer your question, Heather?
That's really good. I was just, you know, concerned that people would be wary, but it's good to know that they're not.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you, Heather. Thank you for the phone call. And it's a fair and a great question. Mm-hmm. And so Sean and Doug, when you're out on the streets now recruiting, you know, how do we get, first of all, a couple of things. How do we get to a point where if you've got 300 people who want these 12 positions, we've got 25 positions or 50 positions? You know, is that possible in the future?
We're working on it.
That's, I mean, a
dream. That's all financially driven. That's really driven by, you know, what we can get. I mean, we've been talking about trying to get a site on the east side of Rochester for years now. That's a financial barrier. There's really no other barrier involved. We put all the strategic plans in place to you know, with our staff that can ensure that happens, and that's a financial barrier. Those
How
are the
much
kinds
money
of things.
Do you need, Doug?
You know,
let's say it. Somebody
yeah, sure.
in the listening
I mean,
audience could just write a check.
Absolutely. A teen empowerment site probably costs about $300,000 a year, just to give you a kind of rough sense of that, and that's real important, and that you know, that pays for the staff, that pays for the youth who also get paid, the events and the initiatives that the young people put on every year, the building and space and all those kinds of overhead costs. So that's a real important question and something that I think we're going to be driving a lot more toward in the coming year. But, you know, I think that, yeah, we see young people coming out for these positions.
What would happen if someone dropped off a $100,000 check tomorrow? I'm serious.
No, absolutely. I can answer that right away. We would be very grateful, and that would be a big start. And one of the challenges is that our entire organization. I mean, people hear sometimes about teen empowerment in the news, or you know, they see what happens in the news, and people get the sense that we're this huge organization. We have four staff, and that includes myself and Sean. We have two other staff members. So, in order to get another site on the east side, I mean, we've got a higher staff, trained staff, and we keep the projects moving that we have. So, I mean, if we had $100,000 dropped off at our site right now, we'd hire two staff and bring them on this year so that they would be able to get trained and watch this process of hiring and recruitment and organizing with the youth so that we would have people poised and ready for when somebody drops off $300,000 and we're able to open a site. If you know, we could get a space and a building, and we wouldn't be able to move because we don't have staff ready to go because our staff are at the site on Genesee Street. So it's part of a kind of a capacity issue that we would start to build internally. But I think, unfortunately, it's hard oftentimes for those who fund programs to see that you need, when you're small, you need excess to build. People think it's excess, and like, oh, we don't need that. But you need excess oftentimes to build the infrastructure that then creates a foundation for you to be able to move and create more opportunities for young people.
We're going to go back to the phones, Gary and Eric, in just a second. But we had a couple questions online just about helping kids who have been in gangs. Sean Brown, you've worked with kids in various backgrounds and capacities. What do you see in this city, and do you see an improvement in the outreach efforts for kids who've had that background? You know, how would you answer the question our listeners have?
I mean, I see, you know, a few organizations doing good work. Obviously, Teen Empowerment, the Boys and Girls Club, Pathways to Peace does phenomenal work with their street team and their outreach, especially young folks that might be in gangs. The big thing, I think, with young folks that are in gangs, they're there for a sense of belonging, right? So obviously there's something missing at home. There might be something missing at school, but they feel like this crew or this group of people is the place that makes them feel the most comfortable, confident, and the most safe. A lot of people, you know, click up because if you're not in a clique, then you almost have no protection. That makes your walking down streets and going downtown and getting to school a little bit more challenging. But the one big thing, I think, on top of that is that young people need to be employed. That's why I feel like the TE model is so powerful and so strong. You have to give these young people a viable option to make a nice, honest paycheck to support themselves and change their everyday reality, to help change their family's reality, help change their reality. And when they have a job, they have a purpose, they're learning these job skills, these life skills, that changes your mentality, that changes your outlook. And I think that makes you, as a young person, want to kind of be about something different and kind of strive for something different.
Can I just say something on the sort of finance front? Because I think a lot about, well, a couple of years ago, I got to bring a young guy from this community to a meeting from a bunch of people who were working on issues of juvenile justice. And we were driving over in the car, and I said to him, listen, like, don't be polite just because these are a bunch of old white people you don't know. Like, lay it on the line. And he said, okay. So he gets in the room, and he sits down, and he says, okay, here's what I want to know. How come I can't find money to go to college to save my life, but I could walk out of here and in 3 minutes be arrested and the tap turns on to incarcerate me? So I really want to know, like, I want to think about why where funding is automatically available and where it is desperately needed and we can't find it to save our lives. I mean, that is some structural issue. But to me, it seems like there should be a way to even, like, think about a bond or a social impact bond, which we could, where we could say, basically, we're going to borrow from money we're not going to use to incarcerate youth to make sure that programs like TE could get funded. You know, there's got to be some creative finance people in this community who are smart enough to work that one out.
And by the way, social impact bond is not an invented term. If you ever heard that, it's worth Googling and learning more about. But that's a very serious idea a lot of people have had. And Gary wants to talk about the question of public funding of teen empowerment. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, Evan, and I appreciate you having these folks on. I'm just so happy that I'm very familiar with Ms. Miller and Doug and all the work that they do and what they do to, because one, I think, of course, the issue is, changing our whole cultural mentality of away from maybe a gun culture to one of a restorative justice culture. It's, and it is unfortunate as the mass shooting was, and just for Kit, yeah, it certainly fits the FBI Department of Justice definition of a mass shooting.
Thanks, Gary.
Is that what was lost in part of that day is that very day another man was shot and killed in the city.
Right.
We lost another person just yesterday.
Yep.
And I think when it comes to finance, I'm glad I got in at this time, because this is just a matter of political will. Evan, you have had political leaders, party leaders on in the last couple months, and you will continue to do that, I'm sure, till election day. And we're going to have a major election next year, but then this year we're talking about county legislators, a county executive, and we cannot lose sight of the fact that we are all in this together. If the city dies, the county dies. And I think it would be important for you, the media, and for every voter to ask the candidate, would you be willing to help, you know, publicly fund these organizations? I've been to Teen Empowerment. I see how they struggle. I know what Doug, what Jennifer, what all those folks do. And it's really kind of almost sad and upsetting that with all of these problems, and all we hear from so many candidates is, well, I won't raise your taxes, without realizing that in the end, what we are doing is costly. And we as a society, and we start right here in this county, we start right here in this city and saying, you know what? We are going to spend taxpayer dollars to help solve this problem. And I really think that's where it has to come from. These organizations like this shouldn't have to go hat in hand and begging for money. And again, I just wanted to call because I appreciate what you do. You know, Doug, I know this is the second loss you've had in the last couple of years. It's just sad and tragic. But I hope that they comment. We really need public financing of these organizations. Thanks.
Thanks, Gary.
Go ahead, Doug.
Thanks, Gary. I appreciate that. I have an interesting perspective as well because I'm not from Rochester. I'm originally from Boston.
I can tell
by my accent.
Only at moments, though.
It comes out a little bit. But Teen Empowerment also originated in Boston, and I'm the one who brought it here to Rochester. But in the early 90s, we were dealing with incredible amounts of gang violence in Boston. And the community of Boston was devastated. These types of things were happening on a regular basis. We were losing young people's lives. People sat around tables. What do we do? What are we going to do? What can we do? One of the things that was done as a strategy, this is actually when the tobacco settlement money came down. So there was money that was infused into the community in large amounts. But at one point, Teen Empowerment was one of the only organizations that hired young people to work on these issues. They would speak out about more jobs and these kinds of things. But what happened when this tobacco settlement money came down is that money was used to employ young people in leadership positions at every health center, at every recreation and community center, at every Boys and Girls Club, at every housing development, had a staff person and a paid group of young people throughout the year, not just a summer job, throughout the year to work on issues, whether it was violence, whether it was smoking cessation, whether it was teen pregnancy, whatever it was, they were receiving a paycheck, they were studying these issues in their community, they were leading events and initiatives that impacted those issues. And we turned around and there were young people hired all over the city. We used to have the same thing in Boston where 300 young people would apply for 12 jobs. And we turned around and then we'd have 75 people apply for 12 jobs and we'd have resources when we couldn't hire them. We could say, well, this place is hiring and this place is hiring and this place is hiring. And so there was an infusion of money created at exactly that piece that we're oftentimes missing, which is hiring youth to create the solutions to this problem. We spent lots of money on consultants that are adults. We spent lots of money on you know, to study these issues and do that. But we forget that young people are experts on the issues of youth culture and youth issues. And that led to a two-year period where no young people were the victim of violence or the perpetrator. And so it had a credible impact.
It was called the Boston Miracle.
And people can look it up, and there were a lot of factors involved in that. But that was a key element of that that I watched, that I saw, that I was part of, a community struggling. What do we do? People talked about jobs. We asked young people. They said jobs. They want to work on this thing. And then we saw it happen. And so it actually happened. So I come from an interesting perspective where I've seen where we are right now in Rochester, where we've been in the last 12 years as we struggle with this issue, and I've continued to say this. And part of that obviously would be, you know, expanding teen empowerment, but part of that's not. I talked about recreation and community centers, health centers, boys and girls clubs, everything else. I'm fine advocating for the other, you know, for these kinds of things that young people need, not just as it relates to teen empowerment.
And I want to say, you know, we've got youth working for us now too, teaching young people in schools, and it was influenced by these guys, and they're extraordinary. They, you know, they're leading the way for restorative justice with slightly younger teens. So I think it's a very powerful model. And the thing that's important to note about that is that it worked for a couple of years, but when the money stopped, the violence came back because some of the underlying issues are very, you know, enormous. And I want to put out that in Brazil, they publicly funded schools and neighborhoods where there was multi-generational poverty. They doubled the budget for those schools, recognizing that enormous amounts of resources were needed to address the issues of multi-generational poverty. We can, if we have the political will and the money, we have the money. We just don't have the political will to end this. But it's not inevitable. None of this is.
All right, Eric in Rochester. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi. Yeah, this may be, beating the point a little bit, but I was just calling in. First of all, I'm a big fan of all you guys. I super appreciate your work. I also work in an outreach program. And so my question was just, with these at-risk populations and all the problems that our city are having, as an outreach worker, I'm constantly running into more or less like kind of Band-Aid situations. And like, I just kind of wanted to hear some ideas. I know, Doug, you're talking about employment, which is a huge one, of course, but for systemic change versus kind of like the quick fix kind of change, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of what you were kind of, Doug, was just talking about. But Doug, Sean, Kit, how do you want to tackle that question?
I mean, Eric, the one thing I would say is that whatever systemic change, institutional change is on the horizon, that can be changed. I think the young people have to be the voice and the vehicle that pushes that whole process. I kind of feel like the young people's words, their thoughts, their ideas, their passion, their power, their voice has to be highlighted. It's got to be central to the cause. I mean, young people need to be in the room when that policy is being written and being worked on. The young people need to be there to say, yep, that sounds awesome, or nope, that sounds bad. I just kind of feel like the one thing, at least from a teen empowerment perspective and the work I've done over my life working with young people, is that youth voice has to always be paramount and always be at the forefront of anything that we do or decide to change.
Can I ask the panel real briefly before I get one more caller in? You know, Doug has talked about what happened in Boston, jobs. We've talked about getting people to work and how valuable that would be. Right now, there is a comprehensive anti-poverty initiative going on, and I want to know if the panel thinks that that is going to be successful, if you like what you're seeing. Sean, what have you seen? Positive?
I don't know. So I know people that are involved with the task force, the tax forces that are going on with the anti-poverty initiative. I guess my initial thought, it would be the same thing I say about young people, that until I think pretty late in the process, there was no people that were impoverished or poor at the table. So how can you have people that have money, who live in the suburbs, that have, you know, a history of, you know, college graduates, a history of owning property? I know a couple of the consultants didn't even live in Rochester. They were brought in for the process. So how, again, can you have people who aren't living in the impoverished communities and you have an anti-poverty initiative, but the people that are poor aren't at the table? So it's the same thing with young people. Like, people are making adults for poor people, but no poor people. Adults are making decisions for youth, with no youth at the table.
You're a skeptic.
Yeah, I guess I could say that. I mean, like I said, and obviously I've been living in Rochester for 40 years. So obviously I've seen all the programs come and go, the initiatives come and go. You know, folks come in, research, tap into Rochester, work with the community. But then, you know, 6 months after that project's done, where are the results? Where's the real solution? How does that actually trickle down to the folks that look like me and my family, my friends, people I know? How does that impact the people living in these communities in Rochester? How does that make our life better?
Doug?
I think that this kind of thing was, you know, necessary to look at this issue. I'm glad the poverty's become at the forefront of this, because I do think that, you know, there's a lot of people who tend to say, like, you know, well, you know, poverty's not the cause of this. And it's true. You know, people do get out of poverty. But it's really, really difficult when you're growing up with intensely concentrated poverty, impoverished areas, and all the issues that becomes about. I mean, you know, I don't know the degree to which the we've got a staff member who worked on one of the areas, and, you know, I don't know the degree to which these plans are going to come out and do anything different. I think that there is a history of skepticism in this community, because we've seen a lot of big things come in with a ton of money sometimes and just go away. And there's sometimes that people just come to the table because there's money there. And so, you know, I don't know. It's a hard one. I know that, you know, the folks at the head of this have a big charge ahead of them, and it's clearly very public. And I have an incredible amount of respect for some of the folks who are involved in that. And I know they've got a big charge ahead, and I hope that they continue to look at that and continue to involve young people. You know, I haven't heard of an incredible amount of young people involved in this, getting their voices heard in this process either. So I hope that that comes to the table at some point. That's the perspective that I come from.
In about 20 seconds, Kit.
I've been involved with the Climate Task Force for RCSD, and I just want to put a shout out for how, you know, it's been some of the TE youth organizers have been part of that process, and they've helped keep adults in line in the meetings, and they've helped all of us to hold a vision for the future that we need to hold. So we need to include young people, and let's pay them to do it.
This is just 2 hours today where we couldn't get nearly to all of the phone calls and comments from our listeners, and I certainly appreciate the feedback. If you couldn't get through, stay with us on a separate day. These conversations continue on these very important issues. And my thanks to our guests for the hour, Sean Brown from Teen Empowerment. I see online why people are saying you're an inspiring guy. It's the first chance to talk to you in person. Thank you for
thanks,
being
Evan.
Thank you for being here. Doug, good luck to you, and thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Evan.
And Kit Miller, the number one fan of the Teen Empowerment and from the Gandhi Institute, and doing important work as well. Thank you, Kit. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening today, and thanks to Val Labanca, our outstanding engineer, for Connections. You've been listening to member-supported public radio.